get some knuckleheads in the news next hour, and also talk to a guy who's been covering the sexual assault allegations against Bill Cosby, not just this year, but all the way back to 2007. And some of them, as we mentioned yesterday, go back to 1969. We'll get to that in about an hour or so. And then I just had to cancel my flight tonight to Buffalo. I was going to go there. I mentioned at the top of the show my plan was to go there tonight and spend the whole night shoveling out snow at the football stadium there, because they're offering $10 an hour. And, you know, I'm a freelance guy now. I'll take the money where I can get
it.
So I figure 10 bucks an hour, then I fly back here in time to do the show tomorrow afternoon, and I can pick up a few dollars. But we just found out that Sunday's Bills-Jets game has been postponed, which makes me feel sorry for anybody in Buffalo who actually went through the 5 feet of snow to get to the stadium and started shoveling. Hey, you have tickets to a game that we're not going to play. So I guess they have to find another place to play it. I happen to know of a domed stadium not far from here that will be available this weekend. And, you know, all we have is a state of emergency.
Yeah.
Which is not really a state of emergency compared to what they have in their town. But I can guarantee you, you're not going to get snowed out here. You wanted to shovel anything except the BS that you find about the state of emergency. You have to shovel some of that to get to the stadium, but
yeah,
you won't have to deal with that. So they can't just postpone it and play it.
It said date and location to be determined.
Yeah, I think the NFL is scrambling right now to find another place. And can they get the people from, you know, the Bills and the Jets to go to a neutral place? But then the NFL doesn't want to have, like, an empty stadium. What do you do? I mean, let's say they pick the dome. What do you do? Tell people, look, you can come to the game for free. We know you're not Bills or Jets fans, but here is a chance to come to the dome for free.
It's the NFL. I don't think they're going to say that.
Free?
No.
What?
No, they're not. However, beers will be $36, yes, and we keep all the money. That's how the NFL works. So anyway, I'm canceling the flight to... Thank you. Canceling the flight to Buffalo tonight. Dan Pink is back on the show with me today. Dan is a best-selling author. I've talked to him on the air about several of his books through the years, A Whole New Mind and Drive and To Sell Is Human. He has spent 20 years studying and covering behavioral science, and his TED Talk on the science of motivation is one of the most watched TED Talks of all times, approaching 12 million views. That's pretty good. He's got a new TV show as his next project. It's called Crowd Control, and it's going to debut Monday at 8 o'clock Central on the National Geographic Channel. I'm happy to have him back on the show. Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. Thanks for having me back.
Is it okay to call you a behavior...
I'm glad you warned me about the cancellation, because, you know, I was looking for ways to get to Buffalo for 10 bucks an hour, too. I'm also self-employed.
Yeah, well, we can all use the money. Is it okay to call you a behavioral scientist?
No, because I'm really just a writer.
Uh-huh.
But I write about behavioral science.
And in this...
you can call me someone who... So I know something about it, but, you mean, the people who have the PhDs and are doing the research are the ones who are really the scientists.
So
I try to do is try to explain a lot of their work to people who speak English.
But the idea of the show, as I understand it, and from the clips that I've seen, is, look, we want to change people's behavior, and instead of telling them to be punished for doing something that they shouldn't be doing, we're going to try to give them something positive that would change them, but in a kind of clever and creative way, right?
That's exactly right. That's a great description of it. So what we do, you know, we take these problems out there in the world, big ones like people speeding on highways, to smaller, less significant ones, people double-dipping guacamole, and then we use that behavioral science. We use that behavioral science and say, what can we do to solve this problem? We enlist some cool design and technology. Then we go out and put these solutions in place and see what happens.
And the first one that's going to air on Monday night as the series premiere is the one about speeding tickets. And what was the experiment there?
Yeah, well, there we did something kind of interesting. As you were saying, Paul, you know, we tend to punish people a lot for bad deeds. And so we decided to flip it. We went down to New Orleans and, you know, with permission of the various local authorities, we set up something we called a speed camera lottery. So we set up a speed camera that had the same, you know, that was connected to a board that measured people's miles per hour, which you can see, you know, you see on highways and streets. And the week before, we said, you can register to be in this speed camera lottery. Here's how it works. If you're driving on this street on a certain day, and you're going at the speed limit or below, we'll take a picture of your license plate, and you'll then be entered into a drawing to win $100. So instead of punishing people for driving too fast, we said, let's have a little lottery to see if we can get them to slow down.
Okay.
And it worked pretty well.
Didn't you also do something where you said, okay, we'll play a song for you if you drive the speed limit?
Yep. Yeah, we did. So in a later episode, we did something even bigger and more audacious. What we did is we went down to New Mexico, to Route 66, and we created a musical road. What we did is there's a way to create grooves in a road so that when you drive across it at a certain speed, it'll make a predictable sound. So we actually put in place grooves that played America the Beautiful on Route 66, and when you drive 45 miles an hour, you'll hear the song in your car. It's just extraordinary, and it's we work with the New Mexico Department of Transportation on this, and it's just a great solution to get people out of the haze of driving and get them to drive a little more responsibly.
How long was the discussion about what song should we use?
It wasn't that long because, you know, it's hard to argue against America the Beautiful.
But the question is, did America the Beautiful come up first, or did somebody go, Ina Gata DeVita? No.
Yeah. You know what? It actually was less contentious. What you'll see on the show, though, is that this is a very, very expensive proposition to put in a musical road. So we had to get a sponsor for it. So So it plays America the Beautiful, and then there's maybe about 20 yards of space, no sound. And then it plays a set of notes that go something like bum, 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 which is, so that was a little bit more contentious.
I guess at a certain point you have to worry about royalties, too. So that you didn't want that to get in the way. Here's the question, though.
Don't joke. That was huge. Yeah.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah, I mean, we can't play. Yeah, absolutely. We had to do something that was in the public domain. It had to do something that was inoffensive. And so, you know, when you start narrowing it down, it becomes pretty easy.
So do you put up signs along the side of the road that say, if you go 45, you have a surprise?
Something like that. We said, you know, a musical road ahead, go 45 miles an hour.
Oh, okay.
And it was really cool to watch people's reaction to it because they did slow down, and people really liked it. And a lot of what we do on the show is take people out of their kind of a blinker day-to-day behavior and shake things up a little bit in the hopes of getting things to be a tiny bit better.
Okay.
But, you know, again, a lot of our stuff doesn't work either.
Well, I want to come back to the effectiveness of this in a second, but first I want to highlight something that's going to be on one of your shows in December, an episode you call Feet First, which had to do with trying to get people to use the stairs instead of the escalators. There is an escalator up on the right side, an escalator down on the left side, and stairs in the middle, and we've all encountered them. We even have them in the building where we broadcast from here at Westport Plaza at the Big 550 KTRS. And what you did was you turned the stairs into, I don't want to call them musical notes. They're more like the scratches that you would use in a rap record. And we have audio from that show. And here's what it sounds like when people would step on the individual steps.
Wiki, wiki, wah. Wiki, wah. Wiki. Wiki, wah. Wah.
And each individual step has its own unique sound, and so as people would walk up, they would either just get all the sounds in a row, or they could go up and down and move back and forth and kind of dance their way up and make their own songs, right?
That's exactly it, and they even would do it together. They would go up in teams, and, you know, they would go up in pairs or in you know, groups of three, and they would try to make this great sound together. And the idea here is that, you know, we all know we should exercise more, and yet, you know, in our day-to-day lives, when given a choice between this escalator and the stairs, most of us take the escalator.
Yep.
And so what can you do to get people to exercise more that doesn't mean, like, wagging your finger at them, but simply gives them another option that's a little bit more fun a little more memorable and a little bit more social. And that was just awesome. We dramatically increased the number of people taking the stairs.
Okay, so is that road still in New Mexico? And is that staircase, wherever you built it, is it still there? Or did you say after you finished the show, all right, take it apart?
Yeah, unfortunately, the staircase is the technology we put in place in the staircase is not there. We couldn't get permission to put it there permanently. But the road is there permanently.
Who said no? So, you can't. Who said no? You can't keep the stairs here.
Oh, it was whoever the real estate company that owns the particular building where the stairs were. They were very, very generous in letting us shoot there. Let me just say that. Letting us shoot a television show there and letting us try out this experiment. But maybe for other kinds of reasons, they didn't want it there permanently.
They don't want it.
Fortunately, the New Mexico Singing Road there is permanently. You know, next time you're in Albuquerque, you go about, I don't know, 8 or 9 miles east of Albuquerque on Route 66, and you'll be able to hear America the Beautiful.
Next time I'm out there visiting Walter White, that's exactly what I'll do. But I'm curious, are the people who have that place where you put the staircase, are they worried that it's going to attract too many people and they don't want the traffic? Or, I mean, what possible reason would it be for taking something fun out of their building?
I'm not sure. You know, we didn't ask to put it in there permanently. We asked to see whether something like this could work. So
yeah.
Maybe, you know, once they see the episode and realize how spectacular that it worked, they'll come a calling and want to put it in place for everybody there.
Or maybe they don't want to hear over and over again all day long. I mean, I will tell you, if my office were right near that staircase, I'd run out screaming with a hatchet. So here's the real question for you, Dan. You were able to change people's behavior temporarily. Did you talk to some of these people who did it, and did they say, well, you know what, this might become a permanent change for me, or are they really just doing it for the immediate reward?
It depends on what we did. Yeah, it really does. It depends on what we did. Now, certainly the people on the road that's going to be there permanently, I think it's going to continue to have those effects. But the things that we kept in place for a decent amount of time, you know, did have that kind of effect. I'll give you a good example of one. We put in place, there's a problem of people parking in disabled spots illegally. I've never done anything like that. I've never parked in a disabled parking space.
Yeah.
I don't think I know anyone who did. And I'm thinking, oh God, here we have a problem. It's not a real problem. And so I went down to Austin, Texas, with some advocates for the disabled, and they said, okay, we're going to drive around and find someone with a violation. And I'm thinking, we'll be there for days. 10 minutes in, we found somebody. And so our solution, though, was what we did is that we added a sign to the traditional disabled parking sign. The traditional disabled parking sign is blue. It has that famous logo. But we added a sign that said, think of me, keep it free, and had a photograph of someone in a wheelchair, someone from Austin in a wheelchair.
Mm.
And once those signs were in place, we did eliminate illegal parking in that spot. And what's really cool is that there's now cities in Texas who want to use this because it's such a simple, low-cost solution that solves a really annoying problem.
Yeah. One of my pet peeves is people who don't need to be in a handicapped spot taking a spot where that sign is so prominently displayed, and then you see them get out of their car, and they're just walking away. And I mentioned this on the air one day, and somebody said, well, how do you know that person isn't disabled? Well, I saw them get out of the pickup truck and walk into the store. You know, maybe they have some mental impairment, but that's not what the handicap space is for.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something that did, well, it's funny you say that. I'll tell you something that didn't make it on the air. We thought we caught somebody who did that in a shopping center in Austin. And so we saw her pull in, and I started, and we saw her walk out perfectly able-bodied into the store. And I, of course, like ran Geraldo-like to her parking spot and waited for her to return, you know, stalking her. It was my sort of moment to be like, you know, like I was on like an investigative reporter. And she came back and I said, I see you parked in the disabled spot, but you know, you're not disabled. There's no sign. There's no license plate. And she said, oh, I forgot to put it up. And then she spent about 5 minutes telling me about the gastrointestinal problem she had that qualified her for a disabled spot.
Still,
that she can't walk long distances or something. Is that what it was?
Yeah, because something if she had to walk 15 more feet, her colon might explode.
Yeah. It was a little dubious, but she did have the sign in her her car, and so we couldn't really use.
Oh, I see people.
The best part was someone who parked in a disabled spot who had all of these like. Pro environment stickers on, you know, this is a classic kind of liberal person.
Yeah,
you know, save the wildlife, and then there's parking in a disabled spot.
The people who really make it bad are the ones who have the sticker but are not disabled. Like perhaps it's their husband or wife or brother or sister or partner or whoever it is. That person is disabled, but they're not with them that day.
I had an old neighbor like that. He used it all the time.
It was his wife that was disabled.
Yes.
But he would drive down to Target and pick and park in that spot even when she wasn't with him. Yeah, that's just as bad.
It was in an apartment complex, and he used that was his personal spot. Everyone else had to fend for themselves, but he had his personal spot. And if anyone parked in that, the cops were there in a second. If anyone backed up, I backed up one time, and I was unloading something. And I took it out of the car. I was literally in that spot for 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. My car was still running.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got in my car and moved it, an officer pulled up. And
don't park there anymore.
Were you just there in that spot? I said, I was just unloading something.
Mm-hmm.
He says, oh, they calling.
No. Here's the real behavioral experiment that I need to know the answer to, Dan. Did that episode stop you from running Geraldo-like?
Yes, it did. It completely altered my behavior and eliminated that from my toolkit.
See, good. So there was permanent behavioral change there instead of temporary.
Exactly. It was not a good feeling. I didn't want to be that guy.
Yeah. Nobody does. The show will air Monday nights at 8 and 8:30, two shows each week on the National Geographic Channel. How many weeks is it going to be on?
We've got 12 episodes, so it'll be on every Monday for 6 weeks in this season. And then, assuming we do well enough, we'll get picked up for season two, and we can take on that that neighbor guy you guys were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
That'd be great.
Figure out a way to change his behavior. Dan Pink, the show is called Crowd Control, Mondays at 8 Central Time on the National Geographic Channel, starting next week and running through the end of the year. Always a pleasure, Dan.
Paul, it's fantastic being with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining me here on the Big 550 KTRS.